Sometimes Forex trading is a wild and woolly place to be. That's why Hugh's here, to pose your questions to Walter, the naked Forex guy. Hugh's got questions, and Walter's got the answers. Here at the Truth About FX podcast.
Hey, Walter. Somebody wrote in. I guess his name is Steve, and he says, you guys are excellent. I just heard my answer to the question that he had several months ago, and he just actually realized the answer on his own. So he was impressed with us and himself. So he says it proves I'm on the right track, and also that your teaching is sinking in. So all right, thanks, Steve. We really appreciate that. He also has a new question though. He asks, you spend a lot of time on the pitfalls inherent to us traders. What are the most common broker red flags that we should be avoiding? And before you state the obvious, I'm forced to go to an offshore broker. He says he lives in a nanny state where we're not considered adult enough to make our own decisions. So what do you think about that?
Okay, so in the show notes, Steve, we can link up. Thanks for your comments, by the way. That's great. I'm glad to hear that. I would go to the show notes for this episode, Steve, and click on the link that will send you to brokers that will take, I'm guessing he's saying he's in the States, so they'll take U.S. residents. And the reason why you want to do that is because you've decided you're going to do that. I'm not really giving any legal advice or anything like that. You should never, ever listen to Hugh or myself when it comes to that. I'm just saying that there are brokers out there that will do that for you, and it's linked up in the show notes. You can have a look there. Now, as far as red flags, there's a couple of things that I would pay attention to. One, where is the broker? Well, first of all, is the broker regulated by some governing body? Not every governing body is the same. So the one in the – it changed names. It used to be called the – FCA, I think, in the UK, and I think it's the FSA or vice versa, or something like that. Yeah, that one's good. The Australian ones are great, ASIC. And so if Steve has 20 grand to trade, you really shouldn't be putting 20 grand with your broker anyway, right? Unless you got some sort of crazy system where you need a lot of leverage, you really, you know, you probably get by putting 9 or 10 grand in there so that if the broker does go bust, at least you have the rest of your trading capital. And if you go in a drawdown and you need more money, you can wire it back in and that sort of thing. But I would never give the broker all of my trading capital. I think that's a crazy thing to do. And check whether they're regulated. Now, here are the dodgy places. Malta, believe it or not, Switzerland, you know, a lot of these, you know, Turkey and stuff like that, a lot of these places, those regulating bodies are not going to be as vigilant as the ones in the US, the UK, or Australia, or New Zealand. So you need to be careful there. I would go through the list that's linked up in the show notes and see if you can find one that is in an area that's not Malta, not Switzerland, you know, not like Belize or something like that. That's what I would do. And the other thing is, so red flags. The question was red flags. So if they're not processing your withdrawals, that's a big red flag. If they're giving you bad ticks and stopping you out, whereas you look at the other brokers and they don't have a tick anywhere near that and they won't refund you and reset the trade for you, that's a red flag. If they start slipping you, if you're trading lower time frames, you're going to get slipped once they see you're making money. That's normal. You know, I think the best antidote for that is to trade the higher time frames, but you know, it's up to you. So the big ones are going to be bad ticks that spike out your trades, and which also includes obviously gaps. So gaps over the weekend that take you out of your trades. And then the withdrawal, if they drag their feet with the withdrawals, that's also a big one. And if they're in a country that, you know, is not probably not, and you can look up the regulation, you know, regulators and see, you know, how vigilant they are. But that's what I would do. I would look at that. The other thing to note is if they're offering you really high leverage, then they are a market maker. Okay, you've just got to, like, if it's 600-1, they're a market maker, okay? Which means, of course, that they're trading against you, which is fine. You just need to realize that's what's going on. You need to be aware of that and say, okay, yeah, they're a market maker and they're not, you know, and they won't claim to be ECN or whatever. If they claim to be ECN and they're offering you 600-1 leverage or whatever, then they're totally, they're blowing smoke. Like, it's not true. So you're really probably looking for a broker that has 100-1. That's probably what you're going to end up settling on, which, of course, is better than what you can get in the US. But if you're worried about that, if you don't want to deal with a market maker and you want to deal with an ECN, then that's probably what you're going to end up looking for, is a broker that has about 100-1 leverage.
What do you think about researching like capitalization, how much money they have in the bank, stuff like that?
You know, that didn't help FXCM. You know, there are examples, some recent ones actually, where, you know, if the owner of the company commits fraud and just takes the money, that doesn't prevent that either. There was a broker where the guy took the money and went to like Czech Republic or something. So, you know, those sorts of things, you're still not immune to it. I think it seems like a What we know, okay, so what do we learn from the FXCM debacle, which people probably may or may not know? What happened on, was it January 2015, Hugh?
Something
is that
like
right?
That, yeah.
Franco Geddon?
Yeah.
Yeah. Franco Geddon was January 2015, I think around the 15th of January. There was a huge move in the Swiss franc because the Swiss National Bank surprisingly announced that they were no longer going to try and, you know, water down their currency. So it got really, really strong really quickly. And the USD Swissy fell like a brick. Now, it took some time to get back up, but it did retrace the whole amount. What happened was FXCM basically went bust, and then they got bailed out by the loan sharks, essentially. And whereas Owanda and other brokers that were market makers, they were fine. They made money that day. So what happened was they got caught as an ECN. They got caught in the gap between people taking trades and they're going in into the market to try and balance those trades out, right? So they got caught in that little microsecond gap and they lost their shirt. So you need to be aware of that too. If there are very violent, very quick moves in the market, you might be better off with a market maker. So that's something to think about. And I don't think you really technically, I mean, I know some people are going to argue this against me, but I don't think you technically really need to have an ECN unless you're, if you're scalping, then yeah, sure, I get it. You got to do that. But if you're trading like 4-hour daily, weekly charts, I don't think you necessarily need to have an ECN. And I know that goes against the grain. A lot of people say, oh yeah, you need an ECN, blah, blah, blah. But I don't believe that. I think that you're going to be okay with a market maker if you're trading the higher time frame charts. And, you know, so that means your stops are further away. That means when it gaps over the weekend, you're less likely to be hit and all that sort of stuff. So that's what I would say, Steve. And thanks again for your comments. That's a great question.
Yeah, great question. Thanks, Steve. All right. Thanks, Walter.
Thanks.